वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
संसार सागरे मग्नम दीनं मां करुणानिधे कर्म ग्राह्य गृहीतांगं मामुद्धर भवार्णवाल श्रीमल्भागवदाख्योऽयं प्रत्यक्ष कृष्णमेव हि श्रीकृतोऽसि मया नाथ मुक्त्यर्थं भवसागरे मनोरथे मदीयोऽयं सफला सर्वदा त्वया नैव कर्तव्यं दासोऽहं तव केशवां भवे भवे यदा भक्ति पदयोस्तव जायते तथा कुरुष्व देवेश नाथस्त्वं नो यद प्रभो नाम संकीर्तनं यस्य सर्वपाप प्रणाशनं प्रणामो दुःख शमनं तं नमामि हरिं परम् जन्माद्यस्य यतोऽन्वयादितरदश्चातेष्वभिज्ञस्वरा तेने ब्रह्म हृदा या आदिगवये मुह्यन्ति यल्सूरया तेजो वारिमृदं यथा विनिमयो यत्र त्रिसर्गो मृषाधाम्ना स्वेन सदा निरस्तकुहगं सत्यं परं धीमहि धर्मप्रोचितकैरवोत्रवरमो निर्मल्सराणां सदां वेद्यं वास्तवमत्र वस्तुशिवदं तावत्त्रयोन्मूलनम् श्रीमल्भागवते महामुनिकृते किं वा परे ईश्वरः सद्यो हृद्यवरुध्यतेऽत्र कृतिभिः शुश्रूषुभिः तल्क्षणात् निगमकल्पतरोर्गलितं फलं शुकमुखादमृतद्रवसंयुतं पिबद भागवतं रसमालयं मुहुरहो रसिका भुवि भावुकाः सच्चिदानन्दरूपाय विश्वोत्पत्यादिहेतवे तापत्रय विनाशाय श्रीकृष्णाय वयं नुमः यं प्रव्रजन्तम् अनुभेदम् अभेदकृत्यं द्वैवायनो विरहकातरमाजुहाव पुत्रेदि तन्मयदया तरवोऽभिनेतु तं सर्वभूतहृदयं मुनिम् आनदोऽस्मि यस्वानुभावमखिलश्रुतिसारमेकम् अध्यात्मदीपम् अदितिदीर्षदां तमोऽन्धम् संसारिणां करुणयाः पुराणगुह्यं तं व्याससूनुम् उभयामि गुरुं मुनीनाम् नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेल् कमनीयकिशोरमुग्धमूर्ते कलवेणुकुणिदादृतानेन्दोः मम वाचि विजृम्भदां मुरारे मधुरिन्न कनिकापि कापि कापि नमाम विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन् इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवीं गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशधारिणे श्रीमल्गुरुचरणारविन्दाभ्यां नमः वन्दे नन्दव्रजस्त्रीणां पदरेणुमभीष्णश यासं हरिगदो पुनादि भुवनत्रयं गोपीचरणारविन्दपरमाणवे नमः पीताम्बरं करविराजितचक्रशङ्खकौमोदगी सरसिजं करुणासमुद्रं राधासहायम् अतिसुन्दरमन्दहासं वादालयेशमनिशं हृदि भावयामि ॐ श्रीकृष्णाय नमः सो कण्टिन्यूयिङ्ग् फ्रम् वेर् वि स्टाप्ड् लास्ट् सण्डे that we're talking about the instructions of Lord Kapila to his mother Devahuti Devi. Devahuti Devi approached Kapila Vasudev for instructions on the transcendental topics, and the scene in the Srimad Bhagavatam is that the Hudi Devi became frustrated with her lifestyle or the way she was enjoying her life, and Kapila Vasudeva realized that his mother had come to the point of renunciation, that she was qualified or fit for receiving the spiritual instructions. So that's where we were discussing, and eventually we were able to hear about the instructions what Kapila Vasudev gave to Devahuti Devi on the Bhakti Yoga process, and explained to Devahuti Devi that this process of Bhakti Yoga, what Kapila Vasudev has instructed, is the easiest process for realization, for self-realization. That is how we read it in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, in that process, there was this discussion between the Kapila Vasudeva and Devahuti Devi. Kapila Vasudeva mentioned to Devahuti Devi, Sadam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavandi hril karna rasayanah kathah tajoshanadashu abhavarga varmani shadharatir bhaktir anukramishari. That's how it was in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That Kapila Vasudeva said to Devahuti Devi that if you want to develop devotion, what one should do? That question came up, and Kapila Vasudeva said the only way you can do that, you go behind those people who have developed Krishna consciousness or developed a devotion in that way. Sadam prasangan mama virya samvido. Those who talk about Krishna, those who are always attached to the process of Krishna consciousness, or those who glorify Krishna, if you go after them, Sadam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavandi hril karna rasayanah kathaha. That they will talk about the personality, Supreme Personality of Godhead, or the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and with the result that automatically, due to their association, the same devotion will also develop in one's heart. This is how Kapila Vasudev told Devahuti Devi. Bhavandi hril karna rasayanah kathaha. So this word rasayana means, like we explained in the last class, that in the Ayurveda also this rasayanam word is very significant, because rasayana means actually you are extracting the essence of so many medicines, so many different roots or plants, and mix them together in a way that it becomes a very, very powerful medicine. So that is known as rasayanam. Some commentators on the Srimad Bhagavatam has also commented that this word rasayanam also refers to that Malsyam Purmam Varaham Narasimham Vamanam Parashuram Shriram Balaram and Kalki. You join them together, or you extract the juice out of that incarnations, that is also considered rasayanam, which is Krishna. So Krishna's relationship with all the different incarnations is also explained in this verse. Sadam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavandi hril karna rasayanah kathaha. That rasayanam, or the essence of all the different incarnations, the 10 major incarnations mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that if you combine all these major incarnations of Krishna, the essence of everything is completely, ultimately is Krishna. So that Krishna, if you surrender unto that Supreme Personality of Godhead, and if you follow those devotees who are actually glorifying that Supreme Personality of Godhead, automatically the seeds of devotion will develop within one's own heart. That is what that verse says. Sadam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavandi hril karna rasayanah kathaha tajoshanadashu abhavarga varpani shraddha retir bhaktir anukramishyavim. That when one does that, what automatically happens is tajoshanadashu, the result of that abhavarga varpani, that is desire for freeing oneself from sense gratification or the affairs of this material world, will diminish in a person's heart, and eventually he will, that strong desire for freeing oneself from the cycle of birth and death will automatically develop in one's mind. Shraddha ratir bhaktir anukramishyam. That shraddha, that seriousness will come to that person. Because spiritual life begins when one gets serious about the releasing oneself from the cycle of birth and death. That the cycle of birth and death is such a thing that every living entity who accepts the authority of the Vedic literature can easily understand that this is what the life is all about. That when we talk about that the living entity accepting one body, he has to move from one body to another, one planet to another, one one species to another. So this is common thing happening with all of us, and we have gone through this process of birth and death for so many lifetimes that eventually, as Krishna says, he has given us, ultimately by Krishna's mercy alone, that we have received this human form of body. That after many, many births that we have got, Krishna says that one has got this human form of body. So in that human form of body, tajoshanadashu abhavargavarmani shraddharatir bhaktir anukramasharim. That when one uses that properly, then eventually it will develop that seriousness of spiritual life. Spiritual life is actually when one wants to understand that what is spiritual consciousness, what is how one releases oneself from this materialistic existence and goes back home, back to Godhead. So shraddharatir bhaktir anukramasharim. That followed by shraddha, or the seriousness or sincerity in one's effort in spiritual life, it will be followed by irati, or attachment to Krishna's lotus feet. And when finally, after that comes the bhakti, or devotion to Krishna. So devotion is not a very cheap thing. It is a very, very valuable thing, in the sense that before attaining that stage of devotion, one has to pass through so many stages of shraddha, radhir, bhaktir, anukramishyadeem. That this is the this is the process, as Kapila Vasudeva mentioned that to Devahuti Devi. Now, when this was discussed between between Kapila Vasudeva and Devahuti Devi, Devahuti Devi raised a very, very interesting question there. After all, as a mother, she had the freedom to ask him, to Kapila Vasudeva, whatever he wanted. On the other hand, he also had the freedom. she also had the freedom, knowing very well that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead present there in her, in presence of her. So Kapila Devahuti Devi raised a few important questions to Kapila Vasudeva. One of the questions was, is there any different method apart from Bhakti Yoga? This was the question. If you hear that, it will look very strange that a person like Devahuti Devi, when the best process among all the yogic systems, like There are three processes to go by according to the Vedic system: Jnanakandam, Karmakandam and Upasana Kandam. Or in other words, Jnanamargam, Karmamargam and Upasana Margam, or the Bhakti Yoga process. These are the three processes. There is no other process. All others are corollaries or supplements to these three processes. Now, out of these three, the easiest process is the Upasana Kandam or Bhakti Margam. And that Bhakti Margam process, Kapila Vasudeva instructed Devahuti Devi. And Devahuti Devi has asked this question, that is there something different than this? Although it is the easiest process, Devahuti Devi showed some interest to find out from Kapila Vasudeva, is there some other process available apart from this? As though, when you read through, you will find that probably Devahuti Devi found it difficult to practice this Bhakti Yoga even. It looks like that. But there was a reason why Devahuti Devi asked that question to Kapila Vasudeva. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, while referring to this, you will say that chitta agratva mridai vijindya bahubi siddhyandi janmandarehi. That this thing called a devotion in one's heart, when does it develop? It develops after going through so many lifetimes in different spaces and men. One has to chittardrakto mridai vijindya bahubi siddhyandi janmandarehi. That when one's mind has become melted enough and understands, that softness comes to the mind, that ardrada, as it is mentioned in the Shastram. Ardrada means that when one whose mind is able to become emotional, reciprocative to the, to not the stone heart type of people, it is for them that this Bhakti Yoga process is recommended. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, while instructing about Bhakti Yoga process, Krishna is saying to Uddhava that yadrichaya malkadhasu jadashraddho binapuman na narvinno nadi sakto Bhakti Yoga usto siddhidah. That Bhakti Yoga process is effective on a person na narvinno nadi sakto Bhakti Yoga usto siddhidah. that when one is not too much attached to this material way of life, and one is not too much renounced, it is in between those two. It is majority of the people are falling into that category. That 99.9% of the people fall into that category. Na naruvino, na adisatto, bhakti yogosthu siddhida. That it is those people who are actually qualified for the bhakti yoga process. So it is keeping this in mind that when Devahuti Devi asked this question to Kapila Vasudev, Kapila Vasudev understood what was going through his mother's mind or what Devahuti Devi was thinking about. And in his answer to that Kapila Vasudev started explaining in the Srimad Bhagavatam what is known as Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya Yoga came in at that point. Now what is this Sankhya Yoga that we have to understand? That in our material way of life, generally our understanding is that we are a part of the nature. Like there are so many living entities in this creation, human species is one of them. So this human species also has got some peculiar nature. That the human society generally have in relationship with the material nature, it operates in this material world. That the material nature, which is made up of so many material elements, and apart from the material elements, you also have the senses of knowledge, senses of action. And then there is what is known as tanmatra, panja tanmatram. That means the five different sensual activities, for example, sound, touch, smell, hearing, and all the similar like that, five of them. They are known as the five tanmatras, as it is mentioned in the Shastra. So, Kapila Vasudev says to Devahuti Devi that if you look at this way, normally a person can relieve oneself from this material life. How? Madiriha guna saktam, bandhukralate shwasaktam, tomadat ubarunde bhakti yogostu siddhim, mahadanugamalabhyam, bhakti reva atrasadhyam. Kapila Danuriditvam Devahutyai Nikadil. That Madiriha Gunasaktam. That earlier we saw that when Kapila Vasudev was explaining to Devahuti Devi, Madiriha Gunasaktam, that behind this there is that mind, behind all the sense enjoyment, there is the mind which is always enjoying that. And when that mind is attached, Madiriha Gunasaktam, when it is attached to the gunas or the three modes of material nature, bandhakral, it becomes immediately in bondage. That's what happens to the spirit soul. Teshu asakta tom amrdakral. That if it is detached to the materialistic sense enjoyment, that immediately then it starts enjoying the spiritual life. Immediately it comes released from that material existence. Ubarunde bhakti yogastu siddhim. That it is possible for that to happen when the bhakti yoga process is practiced. Madiriha gunasaktam bandhukralate shasaktam to amrutakadu varyunde bhakti yogastu siddhim mahadanugamalabhyam. How will that happen? When one associates with those people or when one follows those personalities who have developed that level of Krishna consciousness, mahadanugamalabhyam, then bhakti reva trasadhyam, then immediately that person will have the automatically the devotion will develop in his heart. Kapila Daniriditvam Devahutyai Nigadim. That is how Kapila Maharshi instructed Devahuti Devi. So after instructing this question came back from Devahuti Devi that if this is the case like this, then what should one do when one has not desire for Bhakti Yoga process? And then Kapila Vasudev started talking about the two different situations of the living entity. That Kapila Vasudev instructed to his mother that in this material nature, the living entity which is entrapped in the material world through the different senses and through the different elements which is referred to, and there are major 24 elements in this material world. And these 24 elements is actually the everything for the living entity. So normally what is happening is that we associate ourselves with these different elements in the material nature, which we are constantly interacting with them. These five different material elements are the five senses of knowledge, five senses of action, and then five five sense objects, and generally the sound, touch, smell and so on. And then in addition to that, there's 20 of them. And then in addition to that, we also have the mind, and then the Mahatattvam, from where we have appeared, the material nature, and altogether 24 of them. And in addition to that, when these 24 elements, when they have interacted together, the living entity experiences, in the Bhagavatam it is mentioned as that the living entity's experience of the way the living entity develops that material body into its perfection. Or in other words, in the Sankhya Shastram, on the Sankhya philosophy, the living entity experiences its completeness when all the living different material elements have interacted together. So this interaction of the material elements ultimately does not develop the living entity in completeness. In other words, that although all these material elements exist and the living entity is also there, in the original creation, the life was only developed at the point. It says here, Chittena Hridayam Chaitya Kshetrajna Pravishadhyada Virartadeva Purusha Salilal Udadishtadam. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, that is how it's mentioned, that all the five material elements are mixed together, and in addition to that, mind, intelligence, ego, false ego, everything that has come from material nature, that is all combined together with the different material elements. But although they have all combined together, eventually it did not still wake up. It was still in a dead form. It existed. And the life developed in that body, it says here, that Chittena Hridayam Chaitya Kshetrajna Pravishadhyana Viral Tadaiva Purusha Salilal Udadishtana. That it is at that point that the life developed in that living entity. So, what do we understand from this? This is how in the Srimad Bhagavatam it is explained. What actually it means is that at the present moment, when we are trapped in this material world, we have a conception that we are a part of this material nature. This is our present understanding, that we are a part of this material nature. And that conception is difficult to get rid of from us. Why? Because when the creation happened, the way it happened was, from the material nature or from Prakriti, Mahatattvam has come. Mahatattvam is the next stage, or from Prakriti through Maya, Mahatattvam has developed. And from Mahatattvam, what is known as Ahamtattvam has come. Ahamtattvam means it is the false ego that has built up on us. Or in other words, immediately Ahamtattvam developed me. That concept has come strongly in our mind. So when the concept of Ahamtattvam, that I am the person, I am something different than what my original status was, has developed in this process of creation at a particular point, and that is known as Pragati. Pragati comes through the Maya, Maya through Mahatattvam, and Mahatattvam to Ahamtattvam. Ahamtattvam means my identification as an individual separately from Krishna. That has happened. And Krishna also says this in the Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavad Gita, all these are so condensed that Srimad Bhagavatam is a little bit more elaborate these things. When Krishna says this, Krishna says simple, Mama Ivamsho Jiva Loge Jiva Bodhasanadana Mana Shashta Anindriyani Prakritistani Garshadi. Krishna left it in one verse, this whole thing, what Kapila Vasudeva was trying to explain here. So our nature as living entity is that we are these spirit souls. At some point, Ahamtattvam, this Ahankaram, has come in. And as soon as we separated ourselves from Krishna and our individuality has existed, and in contact with the three modes of material nature, Sattvam, Rajas and Tamas, we started developing what is known as Sattvika Ahankaram, Rajas Ahankaram and Tamas Ahankaram. Or in other words, we also developed this Ahankaram or the false ego based on the concept of mind. Me and mind, both concept has developed one after the other. Now, when this concept has developed strongly in us, automatically the next thing what is that is going to happen is that everything that is happening in the material nature affects us as well. In reality, the living entity is different from all these things. But somehow or the other, that understanding is not coming to us. We are always affected by the activities of this material world. Just imagine that the living entity, who is considered to be spirit, who has nothing to do with this material nature, is when trapped in the material nature acts as though it is an integral part of the material nature. And this is, just see how wonderful this whole creation is going on in this material world. And Krishna is explaining that, he says, Mama Ivamsho Jiva Loge Jiva Bodha Sanadana. Krishna is saying there that as living entity you are eternal and you are part and parcel of Krishna. But living entity is not feeling that. Living entity is feeling, I am a part and parcel of this material nature. This is how the creation is. Mama Ivamsho Jiva Loge Jiva Bodha Sanadana. So in the same way, when this me and mine concept has developed, there is so many interesting stories about this to explain this concept, how strong this concept is in us. To elaborate that, there are so many practical examples are also given. Just for example, if you take some people, they are fond of maintaining animals at home. For example, some people maintain cows, some people maintain dogs, some people maintain something else. But different people maintain different animals depending on their taste or their understanding. So, as long as the cow is there, when the cow gets ill or cow gets sick sometimes, the owner of the cow is thinking that the cow is fallen ill, as though it is something which has affected him personally. Why? Because that relationship with the cow and the owner is such that he is considering that cow as a part of his possession or his wealth or whatever way it is. So as soon as he has accepted the cow, because it is me, the concept was originally there. The cow has followed it as the conception as mine. The mind concept is also there. And when any illness happens to the cow, if he is fond of cows and if he is maintaining the cows nicely, automatically he feels very much disturbed by the illness, and then he starts running around looking for a veterinary doctor or anybody who can treat the cow, and he wants to get the cow released from that condition, unhealthy condition. Now, some people who are fond of dogs, they will go after the dog and they will get so affected by the dog's illness that they will start looking for a doctor and they won't mind spending any amount of money to cure the dog's illness. If you suffer due to a cow, at least there is some benefit. But if you have to suffer due to a dog, then it is just a misfortune. That's all. But basically, the thing is that the reason for that is in cow's body, most of the demigods are present. And Krishna, being so fond of cows, and Krishna mentions that the importance of cow in the human civilization, the human society has a great obligation to the cow. But anyway, that concept that it is my animal and he's going to suffer through that. And that suffering will continue till come to the point either he has to sell the animal away. As soon as the animal is sold, whether it's cow or dog, he gives it away, that distress also goes away from that point. The distress is finished with that. So you can see from that, with the perception of me and mine, he is going to suffer because this identity of ahankaram or false ego, which has come to him over a period of time, he has identified strongly with me and mine. That me and mine is strongly present in there in his consciousness. So this is how that concept is strongly building up in one's heart. Now normally people, if you say these things, it is sometimes difficult for them to accept it because they have not realized that they had a strong relationship with Krishna. All the time the mind has been telling them, and the material world which they have associated, they have always identified with it. So for them the relationship with material nature is stronger than their relationship with Krishna. So it is in this perception that we have to see the Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya Yoga process is trying to break away that connection with the material nature and bring us back to the awareness of our relationship with Krishna. This is what Sankhya Yoga, and this is done through the process of intelligence. And so anyway, going through this, you will also see that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, to explain these things, that sometimes you see, especially in the tropical weather, you can see better. In the living room or somewhere else, in many rooms, under the beam, there will be a lizard hanging onto the beam. Now the lizard is, if you look at the lizard is hanging underneath the beam, and it will give you an impression that he is supporting that beam. That's the way he looks at you. And if you, somebody, one day, one person went and asked the lizard, that how long do you intend to support this beam? He said to the lizard. Lizard said to him that I'm just waiting for my son to grow up. As soon as he comes and gives me a hand on the other side, I'm going to move away from there. Why did we say this story is explained is that in the household life also, it is the same understanding. Everybody is thinking, I am supporting my family, I have to do this, I have to do that. Why householder? Even the prime minister and the presidents of the big countries, they are also thinking, if I was not there to manage this country's affairs, what would have happened to this country? They are also thinking like that. So this concept that I am doing, I am the doer, is very, very, very strong in everyone's mind. And therefore, what is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has mentioned, Kapila Vasudeva has quoted exactly the same words in the Srimad Bhagavatam also. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahangara vimudhalma kataham iti manyade. That ahangaram, what has grown up inside, has grown to such a level. Kartasmi iti manyade. I am the doer, I am the person who is, and the false ego develops in the living entity's heart so strongly that he thinks that the living entity is thinking that it is me who is running this whole show. If you say this to ordinary people, they will think, they will laugh at you. They will think, if I don't support the family, are you going to support the family? There will be the question they will ask. But if you put the same question to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Shankaracharya, they will laugh at you because they know that although you are acting like this, instead of supporting actually the family, what is happening is you are actually stuck in the family. That is what the reality is. But the false conception of the living entity under the modes of nature and under this false understanding that I am doing this everything, as Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam, ahangara vimudalma kartasmi abhimanyade. That kartasmi abhimanyade, that abhimanam or the false pride, what he has built up around him, will never let him to go freely and to think anything free from the home life or from the home family he is supporting or whatever it is. So in the Sangha Yoga process, these are the things which comes into the forefront. Then the living entity has to, through his intelligence and by practicing this process of Sangha Yoga, one has to get the right understanding of the correct identification of one's true self. Now, this has happened now. What is actually goes on in this material world? If you look at this material world, normally there are three states of existence in our lifetime, which is generally classified as Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti. These are the three states of existence. Jagrat means it's our fully wakened state, and Swapnam means the dream state, and Sushupti is the deep sleep. These are the three states of existence. There is no other state for us. We go into Jagrat state. Suppose now we are in the Jagrat state, in the wakened state. In the night time, as soon as you sleep, you fall into the dream state. When you go into the dream state, if you look carefully, you will notice everything in this Jagrat state or the awakened state doesn't exist as far as we are concerned. Why? Because the living entity is busy in the dream, interacting with other things in that dream state. A different mind, different body, everything exists at that time to support our activities in the dream condition. Now, Jagrat, Swapnam, if you leave these two, there is a third state, what is known as Sushupti or the deep sleep. It is when it comes to the deep sleep state, what is true in the Jagrat state or what is true in the dream state doesn't exist at that time. It is only the whole reality is completely different. The whole reality is completely different. So, from this we can see that the dream state, what you are experiencing in this material world, is different than what you are experiencing in the awakened state or Jagrat state. And similarly, if you go into the Sushupti state again, or the deep sleep, the things what you experience is completely different. At that time, what was in the Jagrat or what was in the dream state has no influence on what's happening in the Sushupti or deep sleep. So, but these three levels do exist. And the living entity, the spirit soul, is constantly going through one, is moving through these three states all the time. There is no other state. Either he is in one of these states all the time. So when this is happening to him, when he is in the dream state, sometimes he can experience so many wonderful things what normally he would not experience in the Jagrat state or in the awakened state. For example, suppose somebody is living on the 10th floor of a multi-story building. In the sleep at night, he suddenly started dreaming that the elephant is coming to hit him. So he is dreaming this, the elephant is coming to hit him. And in that sleep, when he is experiencing that, he will immediately start experiencing all the fear or the fright. What he is being frightened by the arrival of the elephant, and he has completely forgotten that he is sleeping on the 10th floor of the building, and immediately start crying in that sleep, or it can be anything else. Similarly, any other deadly dream he experiences, and when he is reacting to that dream. If by good fortune, if there was somebody else in the room who was not going through the dream, he suddenly heard this man crying and he wakes up and he puts the lights on and he says to him, "What are you crying about?" So the man who was in the dream state suddenly comes to his senses and he starts realizing that he was going through a completely different experience. And then this man says to him, "Why did you shout like this?" He says, "Oh, I thought that the elephant was going to hit me." He was talking about his dream, what he was experiencing. So the man who was awake or who was not going through the dream, he says to him, "What a foolish thing are you talking about? Is the elephant going to come to the 10th floor to hit you now? At least can you not think about it?" He says, "Well, what can I do? At that particular point, I was going through that experience. So it doesn't matter where he is." In other words, the spirit soul and the whole consciousness, everything, the mentality, everything, was completely absorbed in the activities in that dream. So if it is like that, the same thing happens with Sushupti also in the dream state. So generally it is said that when one is experiencing such difficult dreams at night, if one is finding it very hard, they should chant the holy name before they go to bed. At least a few, one or two rounds if they chant and pray to Krishna, that such a dreams do not disturb the mind during the sleep. And that is the normal process. The holy name can protect one even from that situation. But when the devotees dream, it is completely different. Not the type of devotees we are talking about the devotees like Vilumangalam. Vilumangalam mentioned about this, about his dreaming. When the devotees dream in Krishna Ranamadam, Vilumangalam talks about his dream. One day, Vilumangalam was sitting underneath a banyan tree. There was a railway station known as Tavanur. If you travel through that station, you can see that is not far from there. Vilumangalam had his family house where he lived in the earlier days. So Vilumangalam sat underneath the tree and he was dreaming. And when he was dreaming, he experienced something different. And that dream, he put it into Karnamadam, Krishna Karnamadam. Vilumangalam mentioned about that dream. So if you dream like Vilumangalam, it's not a bad thing. But the kind of dreams what we get normally in our dreams is not many times very pleasant. And if to get that kind of dreams, it is recommended that a person who is disturbed by the bad dreams at night, he should chant the holy name before going to bed. That will help him to get rid of the bad dreams that comes to him. But Vilumangalam's dreams, Vilumangalam put it in a nice words in the Krishna Karnamrutam. Veni mule virajitagano shikha vinchava chudo vidhullega valaidaivam snigdha pidam varena mama lingan maradagamani stambagambhira bahu swapne drishte arunadulasi bhushano Mila Mekha. That in the Karnamrutam, Vilumangalam says, this is how he dreamt. He was sitting there underneath this banyan tree and he suddenly slept off in the heat. Probably he was too much affected. And thinking about Krishna, suddenly he went into a sleep. And in the sleep, he started dreaming. So what did he dream? Veni mule virajitagano. That a little boy came up to him. And this boy was carrying a flute with him, wearing the peacock feather. Vidhullega valai deva snigdha pidambaranam. And he was also wearing a pidambaram. Pidambaram means the yellow garment which Krishna wears. It was the dream what Vilumangalam had. Mama lingan maradagamani stambagambhira bahu sotne drishte arunadulasi bhushano neelamekha. That Krishna came up to him and held Vilumangalam very, very tight with his hands like this. Vilumangalam says there, when he held it tight, Vilumangalam looked at their hands. How was it? The hands were like long, powerful arms, just like two pillars, he says. Mama lingan maratakamani Maradaga stone, which is one of the expensive stones, like that, so strong, they were diamond-like. Stambha Gambhira Bahu, that Gambhira Bahu, that powerful arms he was holding me. Sukne Drishte Arunadulasi Bhushano Nilamekha. That as soon as he embraced him, Vilumangalam started looking into Krishna's face. And Vilumangalam, in that ecstasy, could not last it for a very long time. Suddenly he woke up. When he woke up, he realized that Krishna wasn't there. But all he could smell was the Tulsi garland of Krishna was given as such a powerful smell around him. And Vilumangalam enjoyed that smell. And he continued talking about it. Veni mule virachita ganeshinga pinchava chudam vidhullege valaidaiva snigdha pidambarena mamalingan maradagamani stambha gambhira bahu swapne drishte arunadulasi bhushano nilamekha. So this way Vilumangalam had a dream. So that is the kind of dream one will like to have, not the kind of dream what we normally dream. So anyway, that the important thing is that the under Bhakti Yoga process, it is possible for the mind to come to that kind of situation at some time or the other. But when the living entity has not separated, that at the moment we have a conception. Reality, we are part and parcel of Krishna. But that conception doesn't exist in our head anymore. But on the other hand, we have a false conception very strongly that I belong to this material world and I identify with so many false designations. That is, instead of having, not only that, we've forgotten that identity relationship with Krishna. On the other hand, this false relationship with this material world is also very strongly there. Sankhya Yoga is that process by which one can get out of this false identification and come back to the identification of our relationship with Krishna as the part and parcel of Krishna. So this is what that Sankhya Yoga process is. So to substantiate this, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Kapila Vasudev explained that a lot more. And generally to understand the Sankhya Yoga, it does require a tremendous amount of intelligence and also sharpness of the mind. Because to get that concept strongly in our head, when for various reasons it won't get in easily. And that reason is also explained. Sankhya Yoga philosophy, while explaining the Srimad Bhagavatam, it goes into so much depth. And the details in which Kapila Vasudev explained is like this. That the normally, if you look, when Devahuti Devi went to Kapila Vasudev, complained about her problem. What was the problem? Problem, she said, very simple. Simple problem. Simple problem is, I have enjoyed the senses for long, long time. And the result was that, now I am tired. I can't do anything. What shall I do now? This was the question she posed. That addressing as the Supreme Lord, she said to him that Prabhanandham Tama Prabho, I am in darkness, I don't know what to do. This was her question. As she said before, no mother has ever asked a question like this in the past. And it will be very, very doubtful whether such a question will ever be posed by a mother in the future either. So anyway, but that question is so intelligent. Why? The reason is this, that generally we are busy with our senses. That's all what we are doing in this world, interacting with the senses, satisfying all the five different senses of knowledge and action all the time. This is what we do. If one does this for a long period of time, a time will come in life when the senses will become so powerful that one will not be able to discriminate between what is right and what is wrong. A stage will come in life. This is why Vedic literature very, very strongly restricts sense gratification. Because vivechana shakti, or in other words, the power of discrimination, one will lose at some point in life. And to avoid that, one has been instructed in this Sankhya Yoga process in the beginning itself, in the Bhakti Yoga process, these points are very forcefully presented to the living entity. What happens? Just like the senses are demanding so many gratification, different things, we are trying to hand it over to them, all the gratification it needs, eyes, ears, nose, smell, touch, everything. But what generally happens is that that when you try to gratify the senses, the senses will never tell you that I am satisfied one day. It is just like the example is given. It's just like pouring ghee into the fire. If you're trying to think that you can extinguish the fire by pouring ghee, it's never going to finish. It will continue forever and it will burn strongly, much stronger. Same way, if you think that you can extinguish the fire by petrol, by pouring petrol you will extinguish the fire. It never gets stopped. On the other hand, it increases day by day, it gets stronger. In other words, it will drive the living entity much more forcefully into enjoy the senses. In other words, the explanation is the senses will become uncontrolled or uncontrollable anymore. Once that situation happens, even if one wants to come out of it, that power of discrimination has gone from the person to such a level that it is not possible to come out of it. In other words, the ability to discriminate loses, and once that ability is lost, then his intelligence is lost. And as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita in the Srimad Bhagavatam as well, that samadhau navidhiyade, there is no more hope for that person to come out of it. But what should one do? Why is this happening? That is mentioned in the Kavila Vasudeva, explained that to Devahuti Devi. This situation has happened because it is not the senses that is actually causing the problem. Behind the senses, there is somebody else who is actually enjoying or suffering or what you are receiving or giving away through their senses. That is the mind. The mind is actually the enjoyer behind it. And this mind has got so many different aspects. For example, if you look at the mind, if you try to analyze your own mind, this mind, when mind is, what does mind mean? Mind is nothing but, although we don't know where this mind is situated, somebody says here, somebody says here, somebody says somewhere else, but doesn't matter. But everyone recognizes this one point, there's a thing called mind in the body. Now this mind is basically nothing but the three modes of material nature mixed up together. That is what this mind is all about. The mind and the relationship with the three modes of nature is so strong that it is the three modes of nature present in us in a different form, which is actually carrying out all the activities of the mind. And our activities will depend on the three modes of nature, what we have associated with. Now, out of these three modes of nature, Satvam, Rajas and Tamas, goodness, passion and ignorance, there are two things which are applicable to the human species. For example, in this Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti, which we talked about, that means the vacant state, dream state and the deep sleep. Out of these three, two of them are known as Vikshevam. That means Jagrat and Swapnam. Jagrat and Swapnam means the vacant state and the dream state. That is actually nothing but Rajogunam. Rajogunam or the mood of passion is what is controlling those two states of existence. And Tamogunam or the mood of ignorance is what is controlling the state of deep sleep. So we can see there that in these three states, Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti, except the Rajogunam and Tamogunam, we have no what is known as Satugunam. There is no mood of goodness in us. Virtually, we are controlled by the lower two modes of nature, Rajogunam and Tamogunam. How does it control it? And that is also mentioned there. In the Rajogunam aspect, when it is controlling our consciousness, what we experience is generally is known as Vikshevam. Vikshevam means in that state, everything what you are experiencing in this material nature is nothing but a transformation of the illusory energy of Krishna. Maya is providing us some false understanding of things, which in reality is not the truth. That we do not know. We are always thinking, this is the truth, this is the truth, so many things. But one who has thought about it very deeply, one can see that through these things, he knows that none of this is in reality the absolute truth. It has nothing to do with the absolute truth. Somehow or the other, as soon as living entity accepts its material body and comes to this material world, falls under the control of these two lower modes of nature, everything has gone wrong. And it is very difficult to retrieve him from that concept. It's very, very hard that this Jagrat situation or the awakened state and also the dream state, in these two states, all what he is experiencing is nothing but what is in the Shastra called as Vikshevam. Vikshevam means this is the deluding potency of the material energy. And similarly, in the deep sleep state, or when one is in deep sleep, what is he experiencing? He is experiencing the Tamogunam, or the covering potency of Maya, or what is known as the Avaranam. So avaranam or vikshepam, or in other words, deluding potency or the covering potency of maya, it is these two potencies that is actually controlling us all the time. And with this background, we are trying to develop Krishna consciousness. So you can imagine how difficult it is, that how much resistance we get it from inside, from our own consciousness. It's not coming from outside, it is from inside, these enemies we have to fight against. So when these two enemies are inside, particularly the vikshepam and avaranam, or the deluding potency or the covering potency, those two will not allow you to understand what is the truth behind all these things. So now there is something more interesting. When you analyze it little by little, you will see something more. Just imagine that when you are experiencing all the different activities of the material world, sometimes we are able to understand these are temporary things. All this have no, in reality, any truthfulness in it. Although either it is temporary or false, or whichever way you present it, in reality, a living entity knows very well that when he is present in this material world, his relationship with this material world is based on the understanding that he is a part and parcel of the material nature. In other words, in the Shastra it is mentioned as asal svabhavam. Asal svabhavam means it has no any real meaning in it. In other words, the only true thing in this material, in this world, according to the Shastra, is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Everything else is, that has come from illusion. Maya has created many, many things, and we have identified with them. And so, we still, although you are experiencing the unreality of the situation, we are still accepting it as real. That is the interesting side of it. We are accepting everything as real. Even the five material elements, the five different senses, their senses interaction, so many things we are all the time accepting as the reality. We are not able to break away from that. But more interesting than that is, the living entity who we are is all the time the same person, experiencing all these different states of existence and different activities in this material world is performing. So the true thing is the living entity. The living entity has real existence because he is spirit soul, he is part and parcel of Krishna. Just see how wonderful this whole thing is. A living entity who is the reality, he is experiencing so many unreal things in this world and still is accepting that as real and unable to come out of that unreal substance. And this is the condition of the living entity. And nobody can say that I am freed myself. It doesn't matter who it is. In this material world, everyone, so long as one has a material body, immediately the position is like this, that he has to accept that the products of illusion as a reality and what has been created in this material world as real and start identifying with that. Although he himself is real, the products of material nature are not real. They are only temporary there. But these temporary things are accepted as permanent, and he is trying to protect them or identify with them or look after them, or whichever way he likes it, he has his relationship with them. Just see how the complication is. It is in this situation that we are trying to develop this understanding that I, as a living entity, spirit soul, has nothing to do with it, because these things have been created by the material energy and not by me. But I am feeling a truthfulness in all these things, what is existing. So this nature of the living entity and that nature of the material nature is together forms this situation for the difficult situation for the living entity. So the living entity in that situation is controlled by the material nature. In other words, he is not free from that state. So what can be done in that situation? That is the next question. If it is like this, that the living entity is trapped in this material energy, how can the living entity free oneself from that material energy? And that process is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam as the process of Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga helps a person to develop that understanding of how to free oneself from the clutches of material energy. But there also, there is a difficulty. For Bhakti Yoga process, when one enters into that, immediately we start looking for results. We want to have some benefit from this process, what we are trying to follow. And you're also not sure whether is there really working, the process is working or not. That question comes automatically. So in the Bhakti Yoga process, the mode of goodness has an important role in one's spiritual life. Because generally what happens is, that we identify with the body, and then we start this Bhakti Yoga process. When you are in the Bhakti Yoga process, you are doing everything. You are chanting the rounds, you are paying your obeisances to the deity, you are taking prasadam, you are bathing, getting up early in the morning, you are studying Srimad Bhagavatam, so many things you are doing. What the acharyas have said, you are doing so many things at the same time. And you are trying to do all these things, but is the devotion developing in the heart? Is there bhakti towards Krishna in the heart? This is the question we have to ask. After 10 years or 20 years of chanting, or 20 years of taking prasadam, or 20 years of doing deity worship, still I feel, I am still looking at Krishna and saying that this is a statue standing there. I have no relationship with Krishna. If this situation happens to one, what should one do? Because that's a question we have to ask ourselves. Because often we talk about the very, very high realizations, and also about the high mellows of the spiritual life, about Madhurya Bhava and Madhurya Rasam and Krishna's relationship with Radharani. That's all very, very nice. But as far as we are concerned, there is no Bhava, there is no mellow, there is no Rasa, there is nothing. You're just standing there, and I'm still where 20 years ago when I started my Krishna consciousness life, or 30 years, whatever it is, I still feel that have I got very far in my spiritual life. So this question is nothing. It's a very, very genuine question. And I think if one has, one will, sometime or the other, this question will come up in one's mind. So then the question, so Vasudeva says there, Kapila Maharshi, while talking about Bhakti Yoga process, he has explained this, so technically explained, that when one reads through, you will be easily convinced that Bhakti Yoga process goes along with the Satugunam, or the mode of goodness. So generally, generally you can see that in the process of creation also, demons and the human species, both are predominated by Rajogunam and Tamogunam. This is in our creation, it is like that. We saw earlier in the second canto, Rajodigaha karma varaha dukheja sukhama anina. Human nature is like that Rajogunam is very strongly in us. We cannot get rid of that easily. In addition to that, what else have we? The demons also have the same mentality like the human species. Rajogunam and Tamogunam is in us as well as the demons. Take the case of demigods. Why demigods are different than us? Because by birth itself, they are given this mode of goodness to such a degree in them that they do not have this difficulty like us or the demons. This is the difference between the demigods and the devadas and the human species and the demons. This is where the difference comes. That by birth itself, demigods have been given this special benefit, and that is why they are demigods, and that's why we are human beings. So this difference comes in from this point, that demigods have been given this satvagunam sampati, or in other words, they have been given such a wealth of satvagunam in them that there is no possibility of them at any time falling into the category as illusionists we fall into. That they have the proper understanding from the beginning, that in their demigod's body they are able to understand that their relationship with Krishna is very strong, unlike our relationship with the material nature. That's the biggest difference between us and the demigod. Now, what happens then? So, if it is like this, that the demigods are in such a strong position, and we are in this position, and why is the Satugunam so important, unlike the Rajogunam and Tamogunam, or the passion and ignorance? The reason being, all these different modes of nature brings different understanding to us. For example, in the Tamogunam, we will not see anything. We will not see anything. It is exactly like sitting in a dark room. If you sit in a dark room, you cannot see anything. Even if you want to see, even if you have the best eyes, you can't see anything because you are in the dark room. And that is Tamogunam. And Tamogunam is nothing but, it is simply stops your vision completely, and it puts that darkness in front. And so what can be done? What can be done? There can only one thing be done. That is to bring a light into the room. If you bring the light into the room, with the help of the lamp, you can see things. So similarly, this Satugunam is nothing but that lamp bringing in. Nothing else. It is that lamp that somebody brings in. One can see things better. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while discussing these three modes of nature, in the Bhagavad Gita also Krishna refers to this in briefly, in the end, towards the end of Bhagavad Gita, when the three modes of material nature is described, it is mentioned there what does Satugunam brings to one, what does Rajogunam brings to one, and what does Tamogunam brings to one. All these things are discussed there. So here, now we are in a situation that we have got the human species and the demoniac species. Both are Rajogunam and Tamogunam in them. That is why, this is precisely the reason, when you see sometime some of the activities of the human species, they are not much different than the demoniac species. You don't need much proof. The last few days incidents in the press, if you read, you will see, is there much difference between the human species and the demoniac species. So why it is like that? Because this Rajogunam and Tamogunam is the two qualities what we have got, nothing else. It is with this we have to work through our spiritual life. But Krishna is saying there that the quality of Satugunam is such that when the Satugunam influences a person, immediately everything changes. So when the Satugunam is powerful in one living entity, automatically, without any extra effort, automatically devotion will develop in the heart. This is the immediate benefit of Satugunam. Satugunam is so powerful that by virtue of Satugunam alone, by the mood of goodness alone, simply devotion will develop in the heart towards Krishna. And in that condition, the living entity forgets everything. All relationship with the material world is completely... This is the pure state of devotion. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the great qualities of the great devotees are mentioned in the Elarasa Skandam. While discussing this, the Navayogis, the nine yogis, talk to King Janaka, which Narada Muni has quoted while talking to Vasudeva and Devaki. What is the symptoms of a pure devotee? The symptoms of pure devotees are, they are not controlled by the designations of this material world. Like, we are all controlled by so many designations in this world, and we strongly identify. But for a devotee who has developed that mood of goodness in him, that goodness will automatically take him out of this ignorance and the mood of passionate ignorance, and is completely released from that. And once he is released from that, automatically the devotion in the heart grows so strongly that he is no more under the control of material nature. So this is the process. So if it is like that, then what do we do? How do we get this Satugunam? That is also a good question, isn't it? Because it's all very nice to say Satugunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam, and Satugunam is important, this, that, and the other. So many things are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this Satugunam process, in the Bhagavatam, the description is that those who wants to develop that Satugunam, what can you do? Just like when you are walking in the field in the dark, sometimes if you want to walk through, if you have no light with you, what do you do normally? You wait for somebody who comes there with a light and you go along with him, who has got that light with him. Similarly, Satugunam is also possible when one associates with somebody who has got that Satugunam, or one who is very wealthy in the process, in the mood of goodness. So this is where association comes. That is what Kapila Vasudeva says there. That this association is so important. Then there is first verse itself, when he spoke to Devahuti Devi, Kapila Vasudeva said to her that Yogam Adhyalmika Pumsam. This Adhyalmiyam, or the spiritual sciences, is not very difficult to understand, he said. Yogam Adhyalmika Pumsam. That one can immediately see that atyando uparadiratra dukkhasya sukhasya ja, dukham and sukham, happiness and distress, is nothing but actually is a creation of the mind. And if one wants to come out of this, that this mental experience and suffering due to that, the jiva has no need to suffer in this material world, the living entity has no need. But somehow or the other, it's no point in telling anybody that, because every one of us are experiencing distress in this material world. So the reality is that yoga madhyalmiya pumsam, that atyando varadi ratra dukkhasya sukhasya, that dukham and sukham is nothing but is one can come when one is freed from this mental problem, that when the mind is involved in this material world to a large degree. So having explained that, Kapila Vasudeva told Devahuti Devi that if ever one wants to develop that devotion in the heart, he has only one choice. The choice is that he should approach those people who are in the mode of goodness and take their association. And in that association, automatically, he will develop devotion. Exactly like The man with the lamp, you're showing him the light. Exactly the same way, he will also develop the necessary qualities or necessary mood of goodness in the association of that great soul. And with the result will be that in very, very short time, he will also develop the mood of goodness and he will come out of the darkness what he has fallen into. But then the question comes, where do we find them? So this is also another question. That this is all very nice and philosophically it is easy to, and it is very, very difficult and rare to find such people who have transgressed the lower modes of nature and fully situated in the higher mode of goodness. But although it is like that, in the Shastra there is a process also, and this is the process by which, why one, by studying, by intellectual process, one can come and develop mood of goodness. And that is the process what is known as Sankhya Yoga. So Sankhya Yoga, what Kapila Vasudeva explained to Devahuti Devi, is that process for which one has the intellectual nature, or one has the sharpness of the mind, and although he has the sharpness of the mind, still he would require the help of a teacher who will be able to give him and develop that strength of thought or strength of ability to think through these things and able to come out of the lower modes of nature and develop the higher mode of goodness. So that process is what is known as Sankhya Yoga. So the Sankhya Yoga process was explained by Kapila Vasudev to Devahuti Devi. And you can also see some more interesting things there. That at the moment when one wants to develop that, he has to associate with personalities who have developed the mode of goodness. Only through the mode of goodness it is possible. But to find the mode of goodness, it is so difficult. And therefore, this Sankhya Yoga process is recommended. That the Sankhya Yoga process is possible and one can utilize that. And eventually, when one has advanced on the Sankhya Yoga system, one will come to a point of understanding that I am nothing but a witness to all what is going on in this material world. In the material world, what we are experiencing, so many different things in reality has no truthfulness behind it. Or in other words, my true position is that as a spiritual spark, part and parcel of Krishna, that I have nothing to do with it. All what is happening is my mind is involved, my senses are involved, my body is involved, but me, the living entity, has no activity to experience the happiness or distress of this material world. That strong concept will come very strongly in the mind for a person who has gone through this process of Sankhya Yoga. That is how Sankhya Yoga works there. So while developing this Sankhya Yoga process, the living entity has a lot of effort to put in. It is not simple like the Bhakti Yoga process. And Bhakti Yoga process is a much simpler process compared to any other yoga system. Sankhya Yoga can help sometimes in the Bhakti Yoga process, and it is in relationship to that that Kapila Vasudev explained the Sankhya Yoga process to Devahuti Devi. When this process was explained, Devahuti Devi asked so many questions to Kapila Vasudev, and Kapila Vasudev wanted to explain that in detail, and that is when the Dhyana Yoga process came in later. But here, there is one or two few more things what we have to remember. Just like in the, as we said before, that when one is practicing the Sankhya Yoga, or the through this process of Sankhya Yoga, what is happening to him is that he is trying to analyze this material world. For example, how did this situation develop, first of all? That is what we have to ask. I'm only just trying to explain a few aspects of the Sankhya Yoga, because that's all we can do. Because to understand Sankhya Yoga in length, in detail, we need to take the shelter or the help of a personality who has enjoyed, who has studied Sankhya Yoga thoroughly and who have practiced it. Only through their help one can understand that. But still, some things we can get a very, very limited idea. For example, how did this situation develop in the first instance? For example, like we are saying that we are experiencing our identity with the material nature. How did this identity develop, first of all? This identity has developed because in our concept, in the creation, we have seen the varieties in the creation. That is how we see the creation. For example, when Krishna created everything, originally there was material nature. It's from the material nature. Everything else has developed one after the other. That we have seen in the Bhagavatam in the process of creation. If you look at the material nature, from material nature develops Mahatattvam, Ahamtattvam. From Ahamtattvam develops the three modes, Sattvikam, Rajasam and Tamasam. Then what happens is, Ahamtattvam interacts with these three modes of nature and the three different Ahamtattvams develop, Sattvika Ahankaram, Rajasa Ahankaram and Tamasa Ahankaram. All the three individual egos comes into. Not only that, then from these three modes of nature, the material elements have developed, the five different material elements. That means the earth, water, air, ether and fire. Then from these material elements, we have also got so many other things. That means, for example, our senses. It is the senses which interacts with the material elements. As we know, that for example, take for example the sound. Sound is one of the our sensual our experiences, sound. Now the sound is experienced by the ear, or known as the shrotram. Shrotram is the ear. The sound is created somewhere, the shrotram is here, and there is an interaction between the sound and the ear. It happens. Who arranges this interaction? That's a question we have to ask. Now, if you ask the modern scientists, they will say, oh, the waves come, and the wave will come and hit the thing
ladder,
inside,
ladder.
Whatever it is. Anyway, they say it is like that, that is how it happens. But what they do not know is that the sense in this ear, who has created in such a way that it can receive these messages of sound which has been emitted from a long distance. And due to the interaction of the sense of ear and the sound that has come, how come a third party is experiencing the happiness or distress from that? The third party is nothing but the mind. The sound is not, the ear is not experiencing anything. All it is doing is, it is receiving the message from there. And the happiness or distress, whatever that comes from that sound, is not experienced neither by the ear, nor by the place where it's emitted, but it is by a third person, which is the mind inside. So from this, you see in the process of creation, you will see, sound is the origin of everything. It is from sound, everything else has come out. This has been spoken in the Vedic literature millions of years ago. And today, after so many years of research in the university, they are saying us, the scientists are saying us, what is known as the Big Bang Theory. So Big Bang Theory is not a new theory. As far as Vedas are concerned, it has existed from millions and millions of years ago. Now, if they talk about the Big Bang Theory, how solid their arguments are on Big Bang Theory? Is that another mental speculation? What they have done in many, many earlier cases, it was a soup, from there the creation has happened. Now it is a sound, they agree that it is a Big Bang Theory, what they talk about the sound. But from very point of view, it was always consistent. It never changed. Millions and millions of years ago, from millions of years, people who study the Vedic literature, they accepted from sound it has the origin. It has not discovered or invented in the university or laboratory. It was done all the time for generation after generation. They accepted that. Why? Because the explanation is such that from the sound, the sound is the first thing, Shabdam, from that the sky has come. Now, how come the sky has come from that? Sky, if you look at it, it's an empty space. And this empty space has no meaning much. How can it be considered as a material element? There is a reason behind it. Why it is considered as a material element? Because it is the sound is transmitted through the sky. And it is a quality of the sky, what is known as the sound. So if there is a quality for anything, it has to be considered as an element. And that is why sky is considered as a material element. So from sound comes the sky. And from the sky, a movement happened. And how did this movement happen? That explanation comes later. The whole process, if you look, it is so logical in the Sangha Shastram that the process of creation, how it has developed from the very beginning right up to this point, what we are today. It will say there that from the sky, from the sound comes the sky, and when the movement happened, the creation of the sparsham or the touch happened, and from there air was generated. So like this process, it goes on explaining that the five experiences of the sense objects and the five material elements, they were created from one to another. For example, from the sound, the sky was created. From the sky, the sense of touch was created. And from the sense of touch, what was created was the air. And from the air, the form was created. And from the form, fire was created. From fire, what was created was the rasam, or the taste. And from that, the water was created. And from there, it is the smell was created. And from that, earth was created. So it is a sequence. So in other words, if you think about it, is it not all material elements one and the same, or are they different? So in reality, you can see that material elements have developed from one, everything. And where did all the material developed elements come from? They came from the three modes of nature. Where did the three modes of nature come from? They came from the Ahantattvam. Where did Ahantattvam come from? It came from Mahantattvam, Mahatattvam. Where does Mahatattvam come from? It came from material nature or Maya. So in other words, everything will go back to Maya. So thinking all these different expansions of the material nature into different material elements and to different activities of this material world on the process of creation, when the living entity gets into contact with that, he is thinking everything is different. He is thinking earth different, water different, air different, everything different. That's the way he is seeing. Because this primary separation of the material elements is unknown to us at any time whenever we have taken birth in this world. Because there is no spiritual knowledge, we have no understanding from the Shastra. We are thinking that this separation is permanent. And that is how we associate with them. And when we associate with them, we find a permanent relationship with them. So, in other words, the original material nature, which was just like a tree, it grew up. And it has got its branches, twigs, leaves, flowers, fruits, everything. And it stands like a huge tree in front of us. And it is this tree that Krishna is referring to. Bhagavad Gita is, that Ashwatha tree, what Krishna is talking about is this tree. This tree has grown so big, and the living entity, or the human being, or human species, is trying to understand this tree all the time. But because he hasn't had that mood of goodness in him to understand, in the mood of passion and ignorance, he will see this tree is nothing but a massive tree with all the different things what are associated with that tree, namely the branches, twigs, leaves and fruits and flowers and everything. So the living entity is busy in this interaction with that. Through the process of Sankhya, one can come out of this understanding and start analyzing these material elements, and you will come to the understanding that they are not different except it is the same thing, and it is what is called as prakriti or material nature. Now, what does prakriti do then? It is this prakriti, in other words, in the Sankhya philosophy also, the whole philosophy is geared to understand that this prakriti will stand between us and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, it is this material nature that is covering us away from understanding our relationship with Krishna. So, somehow or the other, if by developing that spiritual knowledge or spiritual process through logic, reasoning and intelligence, if one develops this Sankhya philosophy strongly, one can at some point come out of the lower modes of nature and be situated very strongly in the higher mode of goodness, and at that time his misidentification or false identification is broken with this material world, and that is the point of liberation. Now, the question comes, if it is like that, why everybody cannot do it, if it's such a simple thing? Explaining it is very easy, it is not difficult. It takes only half an hour or 1 hour to talk about in principle. The reason is that, think about it, that if you come to this point of realization without studying any books, that is what the Sankhya Yoga, interesting thing, says, without studying any books, without doing anything, without studying books, without performing any penances, without performing any austerities, simply by developing the mode of goodness, if one can come to that point of realization, simply by developing the mode of goodness, if one can come to that point of realization, just see, even up to the point of liberation, one can reach how powerful the mode of goodness is. Just see how powerful the mode of goodness is. But because we are finding it difficult to develop that mode of goodness in us, we are always caught up in this material world and the lower modes of nature. And this is the reason that even after bathing in the Radha Kund millions of times, we are just like the same as we are, and not experiencing what Bhagavadam or Bhagavad Gita is talking about, the glories of Radha Kund. So the thing is that the mode of goodness has the is the final thing, what ultimately releases us from the lower modes of nature. Now, even if one tries to develop that mode of goodness, we have so many obstacles in our way. Krishna says that it is the mode of goodness that will help a person to come out of this darkness. So, generally, while explaining this process of Sangha Yoga, Kapila Vasudeva has taken great care to mention that, my dear mother, I have explained this process because you have asked me. That's why I explained this process to you. But otherwise, this process is not suitable for you because you are not in a situation that you can sit and analyze all these things nicely, and with the power of your thought or power of your intelligence, you will be able to reject all the lower modes of nature and elevate yourself. So in that way, Kapila Vasudeva instructed Sangha Yoga to Devahuti Devi. And this is in two chapters, he has explained this. I'll just read those chapters and then we can.
സ്വയം ജ്യോതി വിശ്വം യേന സമന്വിതം സ ഏഷ പ്രകൃതിം സൂക്ഷ്മം ദൈവീം ഗുണമയീം വിഭു യദൃച്ഛയോപകരാം അഭ്യവദ്യതലീലയാ ഗുണൈർവിചിത്രാ സജതിം സ്വരൂപാ പ്രകൃതിം പ്രജ വിലോക്യ മോഹേ സദ്യസ്സമിഹ ജ്ഞാനഗുഹയാം ഏവം പരാഭിധ്യായേന കർത്തൃത്വം പ്രകൃതേ പുമാൻ കർമ്മസു ക്രിയമാണേഷു ഗുണൈരാത്മനി മന്യതേ തപസ്യാ സംസ്ഥർഭന്ധം പാരതന്ത്രം ജകൽക്കഥം ഭവത്യകർത്തുരീശസ്യ സാക്ഷിണോ നിർവൃതാത്മനാ ഗുണമവ്യക്തം നിത്യം സദസദാത്മകം പ്രധാനം പ്രകൃതിം പ്രാഹു അവിശേഷം വിശേഷവൽ പഞ്ചമി പഞ്ചദുർബ്രഹ്മം ചതുർദശ വിസ്തഥ ഏതർചതുർവിംശതികം ഗണം പ്രാധാന്യം വിധൂം മഹാഭൂതാനി പഞ്ചൈവ ഭൂരാഭോർ നിർമരുർണഭ തന്മാത്രാണി ജതാവന്തി ഗന്ധാധീനമതാനി മേയം ഇന്ദ്രിയാണി വശശ്രോത്രം ത്വദ്ഗ്രസനമാസിയ വാക്കരോ ചരണോ മേധം വായുർദശമോച്യതേം മനോബുദ്ധിരഹങ്കാരം ചിത്തമിത്യന്തരാത്മകം ചതുർത്ഥാലക്ഷ്യതേ ഭേദോ വൃത്തിയാലക്ഷണരൂപയാം ഏതാമാനേവ സാഖ്യാദോ ബ്രഹ്മണസ്സ ഗുണസ്യഹ സമീപേഷോമയാ പ്രോക്തം യകാല പഞ്ചവിംശകാം പ്രഭാവം വൃഷം പ്രാഹു കലമേകയതോ ഭയം അഹങ്കാര വിമൂഢസ്യ കർത്തും പ്രകൃതിമീഷാം പ്രകൃതേർ ഗുണസാമ്യസ്യ നവിശേഷസ്യ മാനവി ചേഷ്ടായസ്യ ഭഗവാൻ കാലമിത്യുപലക്ഷിതാഃ അന്ധപുരുഷരൂപേണ കാലരൂപേണ യോ ബഹി സമന്വിതേഷു സത്വാന ഭഗവാനാത്മാനായം ദൈവാക്ഷൂരധർമ്മിണ്യം സ്വസ്യാം യോനൌ പരപുമാൻ ആധത്തവീയം സമസൂരം ഹത്തത്വം ഹിരൺമയം സ്വച്ഛത്വമവികാരത്വം ശാന്തത്വം ഇതി ചേതസാ വൃത്തിവിലക്ഷണം പ്രോക്തം യഥാപം പ്രകൃതിം പരാം മഹത്തത്വം വികുർവാണാൽ ഭഗവത്ഭവാൽ ക്രിയാശക്തിരഹങ്കാരം ത്രിതസമബദ്ധ്യത വൈകാരികസ്യ ജസസ്യ താമസശ്ചേതോഭവ മനസശ്ചേന്ദ്രിയാണാം ചുമുദാനാം ഹരാമവീ സഹസ്രശിരസം സാക്ഷാദ്യമനന്തം പ്രജക്ഷതേ സംഘർഷണാഖ്യം പുരുഷം ഭൂതേന്ദ്രിയമനോമയം കർത്തൃത്വം കാരണത്വം ജാ കാര്യത്വം ജേതി ലക്ഷണം ശാന്തപൂരവിമൂഢത്വം ഇതിവാസ്യാദഹം ഹൃദയേ വൈകാരികാതികുർവാണാം മന്മനസ്തത്വമജായ എൽസങ്കൽപ്പികൾ പാപ്യം വർത്തവേകാമസംഭവാം യദ്ദുർഹനിരുദ്ധാഖ്യം ഷീകാണാമധീശ്വരം ശാരദേന്ദ ഗുരുനാമനുഗ്രഹം സംശയോദയ വര്യാസോ നിശ്ചയ സ്മൃതിരേ വജ സ്വാമിത്യച്യുതേ ബുദ്ധേ ലക്ഷണം മൃത്യുദപ്രദ തേജസാനേന്ദ്രിയാണി വാക്രിയാജ്ഞാന വിഭാഗശ പ്രണസ്ഥി ക്രിയാ ശക്തി ബുദ്ധേ വിജ്ഞാന ശക്തി താമസാർച്ച വികുർവാണാൽ ഭഗവൽദീരചോദിത ശബ്ദമാത്രം തസ്മാൻ മഹശ്രോത്രം ദുശബ്ദകം അർത്ഥാശ്രയത്വം ശബ്ദസ്യ ദൃഷ്ടുർലിംഗത്വമേവ വാ തന്മാത്രത്വം ജനപസോ ലക്ഷണം കവയോ വിദോ ഭൂതാനാം ചിന്തധാതൃത്വം അഹിരന്തരമേവജ പ്രാണേന്ദ്രിയ ആത്മതീഷ്ണത്വം നമസോ വൃത്തിലക്ഷണം ൃത്തയ ദ്യോതനം ഹൃദയം ഹിമമർദ്ദം തേജസോ ഹൃദയസ്തേ വൃത്തയസ്തേത ശോഷണം ക്ഷുത്രദേവജാം രൂപമാത്രാഭി ഗുരുവാണ തേജസോ ദേവജ്യോതിരാൽ രസമാത്രമഹൂദസ്താൻ അംഭോ ജിഹ്വാ രസഗ്രഹാം കഷായോ മധുരസ്ഥിത്വാ കട്ടുമ്ലമിരിനൈഘര ഭൗതികാനാം വികാരേണ രസമേകോ വിഭിദ്യതേ ക്ലേദനന്ദിനേം ഭൃത്തി പ്രാണാനാപ്യായനോന്ദനം താപാവനോദോ ഭൂയസ്ത്വം അംബസോ വൃത്തയസ്തു മാഹ രസമാത്രാഭി ഗുരുവാണാദംബസോ ദേവജ്യോതിരാൽ ഗന്ധമാത്രമഹൂദസ്മാൻ പൃഥ്വി കാണസ്തു സംഗന്ധകാം ശേഷോത്തമ്യസ്യ അതോ വിശേഷോ ഭാവാന ഭൂമാവേവോ വിരക്ഷതേം ഏതാന്യ സംഹിത്യ യഥാ മഹദാദീനി സത്വമേ കാലകർമ്മഗുണോ ഭേദോ ജഗദാദി ഉപവാവിശൻ ഉപാവിശൻ തതസ്തേനാണ് വിദ്ധാഭ്യോ ഇത്യേഭ്യോ ഉണ്ടന ചേതനം ഉത്തിരം പുരുഷോ യസ്മാൻ ഉദതിഷ്ഠതസഹോ വിരാൾ ഏതദണ്ഡം വിശേഷാഖ്യം കണോ വൃദ്ധേർദശോത്തരേ ത്വയാദി വിപരിവതം പ്രതീനാവൃതേർബഹി യത്ര രോഗവിദാനോയം രൂപം ഭഗവതോ ഹരേ ഹിരന്മയാദണ്ഡകോശം ഉത്ഥായസലിലേഷയാൽ തമാ വിഷു മഹാദേവോ ബഹുദാ ഗർഭവേദകം മൃത്യുഭയങ്കര മനസ്ചന്ദ്രമാചാലോ ബുദ്ധിർബുദ്ധിർഗിരാം അഹങ്കാരസ്തോ രുദ്രശിതം ചൈത്യസ്തോ ഭവൽ അഹം ക്രിയാവിമൂഢാത്മാർത്തേന സർവഭൂതസമത്വേന എതിർച്ചായോലബ്ധേന സന്തുഷ്ടോ നിവൃത്ത ബുദ്ധിവ്യവസ്ഥാനുഭൂരി ഭൂരിഭൂതാന്യദർശന ഉപരഭ്യാത്മനാത്മാനം ചക്ഷുഷയോ അർക്കമാത്മതൻ മുക്തലിംഗം സദാഭാസമസ്തി സദോ ബന്ധുമസക്ഷു സഭാസ്യൂതമധ്വയം യഥാജലസ്തമാഭാസസ്ഥലസ്തേനാവദൃശ്യത സ്വഭാസേന തഥാ സൂര്യോജ്വലസ്തേന നിവസ്ഥിത ഏവം ധ്രുവഹങ്കാരോ ബുദ്ധീന്ദ്രിയ മനോമയി സ്വഭാസേ ലക്ഷിതോദീന സദാഭാസേന സത്യത്രയ ഭൂതസൂക്ഷ്മേന്ദ്രിയ മനോബുദ്ധി ബുദ്ധിയാദിക്ഷുഹന്ദ്രയ ലീനേഷു സ്ത്ര വിനിദ്രോദയഹങ്ക്രിയ മന്യമാനസദാത്മാനമനഷ്ടോ നഷ്ടമന്മുഷ നഷ്ടിയഹങ്കരേണ ദൃഷ്ട നഷ്ടമിത്രിവാദനം ഏവം മൃത്യമനുഷ്യാസാവാത്മാനം പ്രതിപദ്ധ്യതെ സഹങ്കാരസ്യ ദ്രവ്യസ്യവസ്ഥാനമനുഗ്രഹ ശ്രീദേവഹുതിരുവാച പുരുഷം പ്രകൃതി ബ്രഹ്മണോ വിമുഞ്ചതി ഗ്രഹീചൽ അന്യോവാശ്രയത്വാച നിത്യത്വാദനയോ പ്രഭവം യഥാ ഗന്ധസ്യ ഭൂമിശ്ചാനഭാവോ വിദിനേകത അപാം രസസ്യ ചെയ്താ തഥാ ബുദ്ധേ പരസ്യ അകർത്തു കർമ്മബന്ധോയം പുരുഷസ്യേതാശ്രയ ഗുണേഷു സൽസു പ്രകൃതി കൈവല്യം തേഷത കഥം കുചിത്വാമർശേന നിവൃത്തം ഭയമുൽപണം അനിമിത്ത നിമിത്തത്വാൽ പുനഃപ്രത്യവനിഷ്ഠതയും ശ്രീ ഭഗവാൻ അനിമിത്ത നിമിത്തേന അസുധർമ്മേണാമലാത്മന തീവ്രയാമൈ ഭക്തജ ുഷതത്വേനാമൈരാംഗേണ്ഷതോഷാദിത്യോനിവാരണീ ഏവം വിദഗത്വസ്യാപകൃതിമയമാനസം യുഞ്ചതോദാപകൃതമാത്മാരാമസ്യ ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാപുരാണേ തൃതീയ സ്കന്ധി കാപിലയോ ആഖ്യാനം സപ്തദശോധ്യായ സോ
സാദി സാംഖ്യയോഗം വിച്ച് കപില വാസുദേവ് ഹാസ് സ്പോക്കൻ ടു ദേവഹൂതി ദേവി ആൻഡ് നൗ ആഫ്റ്റർ ദിസ് ടു സബ്സ്റ്റാൻഷിയേറ്റ് ദി the strength of Bhakti Yoga, Kavala Vasudev goes on to further into the other yoga processes also, which we'll cover in the next class. So if there's any questions, please. Yes, Kishore.
First of all, thank you very much.
Thank you.
As usual, it was devastating for me today. Devastating to me for the trip to the store. Because I could relate with it so much.
We all could relate very well.
Oh, yes, very nice. Particularly the condition that you were talking about, the condition of being trapped, being entangled, rather than being the support. And yes. I really struggled with that one. And I know it's an illusion.
Yes.
But I'm in the illusion. So my struggle is very painful and very real.
Yeah.
And the pain of my struggle is that perhaps there's no way back. And you spoke about that as well. I think the most important thing for me is to have hope that there is a way back into the process of bhakti. And I know that it's not to be taken for granted and it's not going to be easy. Because sometimes I think if I come to the temple, I'll get peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
If I come to the temple and take the silent and chants and japa and do this and that, I'll get peace of mind and I'll feel better. Sometimes I do, but sometimes I don't. Sometimes I feel worse.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I feel that Krishna is trying to tell me something very, very important.
Yeah.
And all these things. And I heard you say how, first of all, I heard you suggest that possibly there was no way back, but you. For me, I think what I can take away today was the reassurance that I have to find someone, and I think I know that someone who's carrying the light and with whom I should associate.
Mm-hmm.
Lately, I've been feeling I need a manager,
mm-hmm.
in my, not someone to manage my life for me, not in that sense, but that suggests that my life is unmanageable, and I have to accept that. I know that, in fact. I like to think that I can work very together and I can keep interact with people and so on and so forth. But deep down inside, I'm in great pain.
Right.
I
Right.
And so what you were saying today, from Ekrateng, it was very important for me to hear.
Mm-hmm. You can see practically these things. Just like I was telling about the mode of goodness. This Vaishnava process of worship, it is the strength in the Vaishnava system. That it improves, strengthens this mode of goodness very well in a person's heart, if one follows it strictly. You see, and a person who has developed a tremendous amount of mode of goodness in his association, those persons who are even very, very fallen will come to a very higher level. We can see from Prabhupada's example that people who had fallen into such conditions in this world, they were able to come out of it and develop such good qualities in them simply by association alone, nothing else, simply by associating with a person who had a tremendous amount of goodness in him. So it is this goodness that changes the person from the lower modes of nature to the higher state of life. And when pure goodness exists in one heart, then there is nothing that will stop him. What is pure goodness means? Pure goodness means that in reality he has understood that everything else is false in this world, what he is dealing with. The only truth is that his relationship with Krishna is important. My responsibility is to glorify Krishna, nothing else. This concept strongly gets into the mind of that personality and nothing can stop him from doing that. And anyone who falls into that net, automatically he will be affected by that mode of goodness. So this is the power of the mode of goodness. That is what Bhagavatam is saying. That somehow if one is fortunate enough to come to that association of a great personality like that, who has developed that mode of goodness, just go with him. Don't have to worry, look this side or that side. Stay with him and everything will come out automatically, nicely. So generally, because it's not practical, it is so difficult to find that sort of people in this world, because normally they live, majority of them will not come down to our level to associate with ordinary people like us. So therefore the process of worship is mentioned. Everything in the Vaishnava method of worship, process of worship, whether it is Pancharatriya Vidhi or any other process, the process is simply meant to develop this mode of goodness in us. Somehow or the other, the goodness should develop. And the lower modes of nature, passion and ignorance should go away. Otherwise, there is not much difference between us and the demons. We are the same quality. Qualitatively, we are one and the same. So, unless this goes away, these lower modes of nature, we will find that our spiritual life is not developing. And therefore, all the thing is this, that even without studying any scripture, without going through any other austerities and penances, Krishna is saying that Kapilavasa says here, if simply this mode of goodness can bloom in one's mind nicely, automatically devotion will be there and it doesn't have to go through any of these studying the books. But it is a difficult process because modes of nature are also very powerful to fight, and they are so powerful, especially the lower modes of nature. And unfortunately in our case, what's happening is that we do things, a lot of things simultaneously. We are also infected by the lower modes of nature. And therefore, it is a push and pull situation and all the time going on in our own mind. And so taking it too long a time to for the changes to happen. We're not able to stay in that position all the time, because sometimes so many other lower activities influence us easily and pulls us down.
I'm not just thinking that the process of association is two-sided. Mm-hmm. Can it not? It might uplift the people in the mode of ignorance and passion, but can it not pull down the person in goodness because he's associating with people?
No. Yeah. This is the question. The point is that if somebody is associating with a person in the mode of goodness, he should have reached that mode of goodness to that degree that there is no chance of him coming back again to the lower modes. Lower modes are if someone is okay, any association will help. As soon as the other person is in the mode of goodness, it is helpful for the person who is in the lower modes of nature. But if one is fortunate enough in this world to associate with somebody who has exceeded that in the mode of goodness into a very higher degree, that will lift him very far, much faster than anything else. Now, the reason why Sangha Yoga was spoken here was that if somebody is trying to advance on the spiritual path, on the Bhakti Yoga process, if he has some intelligence which he can use for developing the mode of goodness, he can utilize Sangha Yoga in his process of Bhakti Yoga also. It can help him if he theoretically understands, because Sangha Yoga is explaining that how we have got entangled in the matter and how one can free oneself and what is holding us back in our spiritual life. So these things are theoretically explained in the Sangha Yoga, and sometimes some people who can think and who are very thoughtful, they will use to their advantage even Sangha Yoga while they are engaged in the Bhakti Yoga process. So that is the reason why it was mentioned here. Because while speaking to the Ahuri Devi, later on you will see in the next few chapters, while speaking to the Ahuri Devi, Kapila Vasudev says, you have come to a situation now, there is not much hope as far as Sangha Yoga is concerned or Dhyana Yoga is concerned. And Kapila Vasudev says that even the Dhyana Yoga process, what is normally described in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Kapila Vasudev changes there and brings a different kinds of Dhyana Yoga process. That comes in the next few chapters.
You mentioned when Krishna was speaking to Uddhava, he said you shouldn't be too renounced or be too attached to things.
Yeah.
So what's the danger of being too renounced? What is the danger in that?
Yeah. It is not that Krishna is telling us that you be like this or that. We are like that. In one of these three categories normally people will fall into. The categories are one who is very renounced and one who is very attached and one in between. Right? So majority of us belong to this middle category. Most of us, we can say 99.9%. The way it works is that those who are very attached, you will find that they have tremendous desire for enjoying this material world. In other words, they are performing their activities in such a way, they want the results from that. And no matter what you tell them, eventually they want to enjoy the fruits of their activities. That is what is known as karmis. You know? Or you can say that those who want to follow the process of karma yoga, they are like that. That is why they take to the karma yoga process. Why? Because they are attached to the result of that activity. Whether you are performing sacrifices or whether you are doing something else, it doesn't matter. You are attached to the result of the work. Therefore, you are engaged in that. Now comes the other one who is not attached to anything. He is so renounced that he doesn't want to get involved in anything in this world, because to such a degree renunciation has come to him. So that is called Nirvanam. Na Nirvanam, na Adisatto. Now what happened to them is, when one is so much renounced in one's life, it is difficult for him to understand the pastimes of Krishna. He will not find any pleasure in them, because the degree of renunciation has gone to such a degree in his head that he has rejected everything in this world completely. To the point, it says in the Shastra that Shavanda Mutra Purishaval Tyajyaha, that is the way it explains there. That, for example, there is an animal which eats the stool of the human being, which is known as the hog. The hog eats the stool. You see that in Vrindavan also, quite a few. So this hog, if you excretia from this hog, if you think about it, you feel complete disgust in your mind, because it has eaten human excretia and then it eats excretia. That means another, it's a second degree in many ways, you can say. So when you think about it, how much disgust you feel, think about it. If you feel the same disgust towards sense gratification in this world, then you are qualified for the Jnana Yoga, the process of knowledge. You are qualified for that. That is the process you should go into. But our case is not like that. We want to have some comforts in this world. We like to have some nice prasadam, a place to sleep, and some attachment to this material world. But at the same time, we know that this world is not all reality, because at the end you realize that today we are here together, tomorrow we are break up and gone away in our own life. We goes away. So that is how far it is real, to that extent. But at the same time, our renunciation is not that strong that we are able to give up and reject everything. We are in between. For such people, Bhakti Yoga goes to Siddhida. Bhakti Yoga will work for them. Why? Because their attachment is not that strong to the material world. On the other side, they still have some attachment here. Because that attachment, they will find happiness in Krishna's pastimes. They will enjoy Krishna's pastimes. So therefore, for these three different reasons, Jnana Yogam, Karma Yogam and Bhakti Yogam suits three different kinds of people. It's not that one is superior to the other or anything. Even through Jnana Margam, one will come to the Bhakti Margam eventually. Or through Karma Margam, you can come. But Bhakti Yoga is the process, simplest and easiest to execute out of the three. Because Jnana Yogam requires tremendous intelligence, intellectual power, reasoning power and determination. All these things are required in the Jnana Yogam. Karma Yoga requires tremendous effort from one side. And at the same time to execute that, the chances of falling down are a lot in the process of Karma Yoga. Bhakti Yoga has no such problem. You have to just stand in the queue. The devotees will take you to the friend of the deity. Take you to Krishna. All you have to do is just stand in the queue. You don't have to look this side. If there is a rail, this side is also a rail. Friend, there is a, when there is a rush from the back, you will get back to the friend of the deity. So this Bhakti Yoga process is the simplest process that way, compared to all the other processes. That is why Bhakti Yoga process is the yoga process for the in this age when people have a difficulty with the other processes.
One thing that was very noticeable with the gentleman there, is when we talk about knowledge, if one knows oneself lower than the straw in the street, this is that's the knowledge that we're looking for, that in fact, isn't it? If we can cry to Krishna, feeling maybe as he did, or it seemed to express, then that's the key. That he wants to cry to Krishna for this person who wants to think. And that's the key. If we don't actually admit in ourselves that we're lower than the straw in the street, that we... that's the key to self-realization, isn't it? It seems to me. I don't know. It's a tough one, but some people...
It is a tough one, actually. Yeah. Because, in the morning after the Mangalarti, we sing with the Trinara Vishu Nichena, and we say about the straw in the street... more tall than the tree, and humble than the blade of grass. I don't know how many times we think the same thing after that. After the minute 5:20, we leave the temple room to go leave somewhere, or we start chanting. I don't know. Yeah, to me, I'm telling you my case, that nothing comes to me after that. It's finished then and there. that verse and its meaning is over there. It doesn't come back again. Throughout the day, in all your dealings with other people, if I start thinking like that, what's going to happen to me? So it's a difficult thing. Then that is, in fact, that verse is actually a reflection of that mood of goodness. But although we recite that verse, we are not able to live up to that verse, what the verse says. That is our difficulty. The verse is very, very nice. Tanara Vishuni Jaya Tarora Visahishtana. Such a beautiful words and a beautiful meaning also. But are we able to live up to that? That is where the problem comes. And that is why it is, because as a human nature, we have this lower modes of nature in us very strongly. So sometimes it can happen that 30, 40 years we may sit in the temple room and chant this verse. And still, 40 years we are still, as we say, the dog's tail, if you put a pipe on it to make it straight, you take out the pipe after 10 years, it still goes back to its original shape. It's the same story with us. It's not much different than that. So that is what it is. You have to understand that the so much you can do in spiritual life, so much you can do, but ultimately the success will only come when Krishna opens his eyes and tells us that you can have that mode of goodness a little bit in you now. You have suffered enough with the lower modes of nature. That's why Krishna's mercy is the important factor in this way. Therefore, we have to do everything what we have been told. We have to chant, we have to take the prasadam, we have to study Bhagavatam, we have to worship the deity, everything we have to do. All that will help us to develop this mode of goodness. That is the Vaishnava process. The Vaishnava method of worship is such, it is simply meant to boost this mode of goodness in us. That is the difference between the worship of Lord Shiva, worship of Lord Goddess Durga and others. This is where Vaishnava worship becomes more important, that is this mood of goodness. It says in the Bhagavad in the beginning, all this in the second chapter, Sattvam Yal Brahma Darshanam, that Sattvagunam, when it develops everything, that proper realization will automatically come to us.
Except that in the our Sopna state, that Vichyapatmikam dominates, sorry, the Rajagun dominates, and the deep sleep state, the Tamagun dominates.
Yeah.
So Sattvagun awakens, and while you are awakened, stay Sattvagun.
Sorry, say again?
Sattvagun is working when you are awakened, more Sattvagun is there.
When you are awakened, you are in the passion and ignorance. Jagrat is the vacant state, then it is passion. And Swapnam also is passion. And deep sleep is ignorance. So there is no Sattvagunam in us. We are by creation itself, we are Rajogunam and Tamogunam. We are not in Sattvagunam, in creation itself. Now and then, we get a little glimpse in us. And that is when we feel happy in our spiritual life for a second. That, oh, things are working out nicely. But that lives very short time for us. But in the pure state of mode of goodness, the lower modes of nature have to go away. Just to complete it. Like, what is this lower modes of nature? Lower modes of nature means, this modes of nature is a very, very difficult topic to explain it and to understand it. Nobody can say who is in what mode of nature. Because you are never in one mode of nature. Sometimes you are in the mixed modes of nature, passion and ignorance together, or in purely in the mode of goodness, or purely in the mode of passion. But generally what can happen is that when one is in the lower modes of nature, his activities will show more or less what modes of nature he is working in. That is how it is understood. That pure goodness is, in one oneness, when it has come to the mode of goodness, there is no question of that personality engaging in any activities except in Krishna consciousness. And not only in Krishna consciousness, his love for Krishna is so high that even any material attractions will not affect him. He'll transcend even that. The material attractions will not even influence that person. He'll go beyond than that. And not only that, when he's in that person, automatically his association will change others in also from their lower modes of nature. That's how you can see that. But
Because Prabhupada and Bhagavad Gita says we suffer with three modes of material nature. And therefore there should be Sattvagun also in the human being.
Yes, Sattvagunam is there in the nature, but not in us. You see, the nature, there is Sattvagunam. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, where you can find Sattvagunam? The water you drink, the water you use in your life, the place where you live, the food what you eat, the mantras you chant, and the dress you wear, all these things have got effect on the Sattvagunam. Krishna says in the 11th canto all these things. But that is there. But unfortunately in us, the Sattvagunam is not there. So that's our problem.
Could you explain the Vairagya and the Yukta Vairagya?
Well, Vairagyam and Yukta Vairagyam is in the sense that Vairagyam is for jnanis, Yukta Vairagyam is for devotees. That's the difference basically. Jnanis, they reject everything. They don't want anything to do with this material nature. That is jnanis Vairagyam. They will say that everything in this material world is rubbish, that they have rejected it completely. They don't want to do anything with it. Because in their concept, they want to realize themselves as the Brahman, Brahman realization. They want to strengthen themselves. And this realization will come to them at some point in time when they have rejected everything, that true Vairagyam has developed sincerely in their heart. When it has developed, they don't care for anything in this material world. That is their state of consciousness at that time. But for a devotee, to reject everything is difficult, because in his relation service to Krishna, or in service or in relationship with Krishna, there are things which he is able to utilize in Krishna's service. There are things which can be utilized in Krishna's service. For example, like Prabhupada used to give the example, want to glorify Krishna, microphone is useful. So we won't reject microphone because of that. But we are not saying that this microphone is our life business in life. That's not, even if there is no microphone, you can still talk about Krishna. Nothing will stop you from glorifying Krishna. Similarly, everything what is important to Krishna is important to a devotee. Yeah? It's not like the jnanis. Jnanis don't have any importance to anything. But for a devotee, what is important to Krishna is important to devotee also. For example, if Krishna has taken something, he has eaten some prasadam and given to us the balance, we would like to eat that, wouldn't we? That will be our nature. I won't reject it saying that it is my sense gratification, so I don't want to do anything with this prasadam what Krishna has kindly given me. So I have to see as a devotee that it is Krishna's mercy that's coming to me through prasadam. So that way, that is yukta vairagyam. Because that I have vairagyam to some degree, but at the same time, in relationship with Krishna, don't want to have any vairagyam. Krishna throws away a garment, what he has used, and tells me, you can use it. I'll be more than happy to take it and worship that one time. So that should be the devotee's attitude, to think that everything in relationship with Krishna is to be accepted. Everything not in relationship with Krishna is to be rejected. Because for my own sense gratification, I shouldn't have it. But if Krishna is giving me something happily, I will accept that. Because it will help me. That is what helped Uddhava. Uddhava says in the Bhagavatam, what helped him in his spiritual life? Why? 112 years he ate Krishna's prasadam. That every time Krishna has eaten, whatever that is left behind, Uddhava has arranged with Rukmini Devi, passed that over to me. And Rukmini Devi handed over the plate to Uddhava. Uddhava happily ate that. Every cloth what Krishna has worn and thrown away, Rukmini used to arrange all the nice clothes for Krishna every day. And so many clothes which was worn out or Krishna has worn once or twice will be given to Uddhava. Uddhava will wear that happily. Why? It is Krishna's prasadam. Garland, same thing. What Uddhava, Krishna has rejected, Uddhava must take it and wear it. So like this, association. This is association with Krishna directly. Gopis got the same thing. And with the result was that they all were elevated to such higher degree of goodness, and with the result, devotion developed in their heart. So this is how the step-by-step process. But if you reject everything what Krishna gives you, there is no possibility of developing goodness in you, because you are still controlled by the lower modes of nature. So for a devotee, yukta vairagyam is necessary. For a jnani, total vairagyam is necessary. So two personalities following two different routes, that's all. We'll stop there. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.